and speak. I really enjoy being here, even though my wife is not so happy because I come back addicted to coffee, addicted to really good coffee too. So, but I enjoy being here. I'm going to talk about some work that I put out last week with some students, Paul Franch and Alicia Wasanji at McGill, and a former student of McGill, now postdoc at King's, Rihanna. And then I'll also talk at the end a little bit about a paper that doesn't yet exist, which hopefully will come out very soon next year.
Aim for the 010001.
I don't think that's going to happen. That would be nice. So the outline of my talk is I'll first give an overview of inflation, then a motivation of why I want to study the types of operators and the types of connectrums that I'm going to include. And then I'm going to study the inflationary solutions of these, in particular what the non-canonical inflationary solutions actually are, so the generalizations of slow roll, but now to these other types of models. We'll show that non-canonical inflation is, in general, attractive, so there are attractors in phase space. I will talk about the requirements that you need on Lagrangian, and actually to get non-canonical inflation, not every Lagrangian that you write down will give you non-canonical inflation. There are certain classes of Lagrangians that you will want to have, and then illustrate that through some examples. And at the end, I'll speculate some on some of the phase space dynamics of these models and what this means for the overshoot problem in inflation. So let me start with a very broad overview. So we are getting a great picture of cosmology from all the great experiments that are out there, including WMAP. And one thing that they're telling us is that the universe is very flat and homogeneous, and we see some scale of initial fluctuations. But there's some open questions about why is the universe so flat and homogeneous. It doesn't seem to be an attractor from normal dynamics, the late-time dynamics, so we shouldn't expect it to be. And we don't really know from this particular model or from the late-time dynamics what sets the initial fluctuations. And one answer to this, one popular answer, is to have an earlier period of accelerated expansion, an early period of inflation. And one of the main goals, then, of studying inflation is to figure out what the physics of the inflationary era is and how we can match observations to the physics of the inflationary era. So the classical physics tells us why the universe is so flat and homogeneous, at least why the early universe is so flat and homogeneous. So I take an FRW space, and I want accelerated expansion. I can write the scale factor in terms of the energy density. And then there's two parameters that really help me parameterize whether I have inflation. One parameter, epsilon, which controls how fast the Hubble parameter varies. And this tells me whether inflation actually happens at all. And then a parameter, eta, which tells me how fast epsilon varies. And I need that parameter for inflation to have long enough. And when the energy density, or when the Hubble parameter is constant, so when epsilon is small, we get inflation, so we get exponential expansion. In order to get a lot of e-folds of exponential expansion, we need epsilon small, and we need this eta parameter to be small. OK. So the way we do this, traditionally, is to parameterize inflation by some scalar field with some canonical kinetic term and a potential. And in order to satisfy the statement that I had on the previous slide, when energy density or the Hubble parameter is constant, then we get inflation. Well, this will happen if the energy density is dominated by the potential over the kinetic energy. And this will generally happen for fairly flat potentials. And in particular, when this happens, then my inflationary parameters can be written in terms of some slow roll parameters, which are just derivatives of the potential. And if I want these things to be small, then I want derivatives of the potential to be sufficiently small. So I want the potential to be sufficiently flat. OK, so this is the standard kind of story that we know on how to get inflation from the early universe. And how to get the early universe to be homogeneous and nearly flat. What sets the initial fluctuations that we see, say, in WMAP? So what sets the temperature and the curvature fluctuations? Well, these are just the fluctuations, the quantum fluctuations, of the inflaton itself on the potential. And these fluctuations lead to a variation in the end of inflation, so when reheating actually happens, and that leads to density or curvature perturbations that get stretched out to beyond the horizon scale. OK, so this is the standard story of inflation. However, the inflationary model I wrote down before was some field theory. And if I apply effective field theory ideas to it, then I should treat it as some model that's only valid in some energy range. So I have the mass of my scalar field, m phi. I have the Hubble parameter, h. And then this theory should only be valid up to some scale above which there's some new physics. And the scale at which it should be valid is lambda, say. And there's some new physics, the string scale maybe, the Planck scale, some other scales that may be important in the UV. And when I study inflation, I should integrate out the UV physics. And if I integrate out the UV physics, that should induce then higher dimensional operators in my IR theory, or my low energy theory, where these operators are whatever operators are consistent with the symmetries of the UV. Okay, good. So, for instance, we know that inflation is sensitive to these types of operators. One example is if I get corrections into the potential. So let's say I have some effective potential, which has a constant piece plus a mass term. And now let me add, let me consider there's a dimension 6 operator expressed by the Planck scale m Planck. And the dimension 6 operator is written as some dimension 4 operator times phi squared. Okay. If this dimension 4 operator gets a VEV, which is the scale of the potential itself, V naught, so this is in the limit when V naught is dominating the potential. So that might happen, for instance, in many supergravity models. It's a supergravity eta problem when this would happen. Then the eta parameter that we want to be small in order for inflation to happen ends up being order 1. And that ruins then our inflationary model. We don't get enough inflation. And so inflation then is actually very sensitive to even dimension 6 Planck suppressed operators. And we should worry about them. And we should, if we expect to have a model that that is embeddable in a UV theory, we should expect to be able to compute these things and control the coefficients of these operators so that we have a trustable inflationary model.
It's not that you have a breakdown of the expansion. It's just that particular operator you're sensitive to.
Yeah. Yeah, so for instance, this isn't, I'm not going at phi over m Planck much, much greater than 1, for instance. So it's not that I have to include all the other terms. This particular term itself really is particularly bad.
So people have looked at like the next order and they've done the same sort of analysis.
The next order should give you, yeah, indeed, further corrections to eta, but then they should be a bit more suppressed by a Planck scale. So. In general, we don't really know what that would be. That has to do with wherever this operator is coming from, right? So I don't think, in general, you would know exactly what that would be.
In general, I might expect it to be smaller. So
that's right. That's right.
His argument was that if there's no symmetry for the digits from having an O4, a V0, which you had to have for inflation anyway, no symmetry forbids the phi squared, so then nothing can forbid an O4 if it has phi squared. But nothing forbids phi squared. The problem was that m naught squared is so small that this next thing, which was small, was winning over the m naught squared. But really, you'd expect m naught squared to be huge. That should be lambda squared. So that the supergravity is already getting rid of the problem that it should have been enormous, and getting m naught small in the first place was already a big step.
But I guess that's a different. You're saying the assumption about m naught is already small. Instead of, if I put a mass square, then I can expect maybe phi is order h, and phi is h over m,
yeah,
over m squared. But both of those things are much smaller.
But this is like this is like the second order problem. The first order problem was really why was m not small?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, at some level, you have to convolve them together because you want the total mass to be small.
Yeah.
And so.
You want it smaller than small.
Yeah. Well, and so then you can play games of trying to say cancel these two operators against each other, which people play then. Yeah. In these string models, for instance.
Is the treatment most efficient to suppress the most number?
What's that?
That whatever
trick
you play to get them
more
small,
it's
not sufficient
generally
to keep the high
order
to small.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, unless you have something, unless it's a symmetry, the problem is it's
just usual hierarchy
problem, right?
There's
no symmetries.
So generically,
that's
going to be.
So that's not good. Could you just tell us what the magic is that makes M not small in supergravity in words, or is that not possible?
You make it small, right? I mean, you just say it's going to be small. Yes, that's right.
We just measure the fields around it.
Yeah.
By the time you can take all the higher order things have low energy. Normally it's not written in this way, but you know, M not plus whatever operator is that total sum gives people like fields.
Yeah.
However they came from.
You're right. You're right. If you're having a problem with it, or you feel uncomfortable with this,
I'm always uncomfortable. Move on.
Okay. Okay. So, but I can also consider high-dimensional operators which correct kinetic terms. So, for a particular model, let me consider one of these two-field models. So, I have my inflaton phi with a potential, and I have some massive field rho, which has a canonical kinetic term here, and some mass lambda. And phi and rho only couple through a kinetic term like this. If I integrate out rho, then my effective theory will look like canonical kinetic term plus potential, but then plus additional terms, higher dimensional kinetic operators, and powers essentially of d phi squared. So this is one example in which I could expect higher dimensional kinetic terms, powers of d phi squared in particular, from some UV model integrating out some UV physics. So the question that I want to ask, or the goals that I want to consider, are in these types of models where I consider these higher dimensional kinetic terms, can I construct explicit inflationary solutions, so generalizations of the slow roll solutions? I want to show that it has an attractor, and I want to see what properties Lagrangian should have. Okay, so what types of Lagrangians am I actually going to be considering? I want to consider Lagrangians that are some scalar field, phi, which is some function of x and phi, where x is d phi squared, or for the background, just phi dot squared, and it's minimally coupled to gravity. This is not actually the most general Lagrangian I could have chosen. I'm only considering functions of x. I could have also written down in general higher dimensional or higher derivative operators, so d cubed, d to the 4, d to the 5th. Operators, and we'll talk about those later. But for right now, let me just restrict to these types of Lagrangians and see what happens. There are some examples of these that you find in the literature if you look around. Of course, canonical kinetic term is one of them. A popular one that shows up in string models is a DBI Lagrangian, which is a form of a square root of this, which if you expand it out, is some power series in these powers x. There's a Lagrangian which looks very similar, a closed string tachyon, which is a similar structure. K-inflationary Lagrangians by Mukhanov and company have this form. Or more generally, you can just consider some series of Lagrangians. And so what I want you to have in mind is maybe just some series of operators with coefficients which we don't quite know yet. Okay. I'm going to put some restrictions on the space of Lagrangians I'm going to consider. These are just my rules. People can play by different rules if they want to. I want my Lagrangians to obey the null energy condition. That seems kind of important to me. At least I would really like it. And so this will tell me that the first derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to x should be positive. I want my perturbations to actually have a physical speed of sound. So I want the sound speed squared to be less than 1 and greater than 0. That also seems kind of reasonable to me, but one can consider breaking that. But in combination with this, that says that the second derivative of Lagrangian with respect to x should be greater than 0. And just for convenience sake, I would like these to reduce to the canonical Lagrangian in some limit. So that's just x minus v of phi. And these restrictions get rid of the k-inflation model because it violates these things somewhere in phase space. But in fact, much of what I say will apply to any type of Lagrangian you write down, but what I really have in mind in the back of my head is something well-behaved, where well-behaved means it satisfies these conditions. So the phenomenology of these types of models has been considered before, in fact, quite a few years ago. So if I use inflationary parameters, these are the same epsilon and eta that I had before, and a new parameter kappa, Kappa keeps track of how fast the sound speed varies with time. Then I can write all my inflationary observables in terms of these inflationary parameters. So I can write the power spectrum, the spectral index, the tensor to scalar ratio will tell us about gravity waves, and the non-Gaussian D in these parameters. And the most exciting thing, perhaps, from a observation standpoint, is that the non-Gaussian D goes like 1 over the sound speed squared. And the sound speed really tells us how far we are from canonicalness of the kinetic term. For canonical kinetic terms, the sound speed is exactly 1. For highly non-canonical kinetic terms, it's much less than 1. And so if we see non-Gaussian D in the CMB, this will tell us that, this will tell us that it's possibly a non-canonical kinetic term that is giving rise to the inflationary dynamics. So that's kind of exciting. OK. But what I want to do is take a step further and not just consider the phenomenology. I want to consider the generalization of the slow roll solution. So let me take a step back to canonical inflation, where I have the equations of motion, the scalar field equation of motion, and the Friedman equation. And the slow roll approximation is to drop the acceleration term and to drop the kinetic energy. So these are my approximations.
Sorry, question.
Yes?
Back on your last slide. So yeah. It seems like you're saying then that in the case of a canonical Lagrangian, when the sound speed goes to 1, you still get non-Gaussian energy of order 1. Is that right? Or that's suppressed by something else?
So this is in the small sound speed limit that I wrote. It's certainly in the canonical case, you get non-Gaussian energy of order epsilon.
OK.
Okay, so the slow roll approximation is such that I drop these terms. And this gives me a solution to the scalar equation of motion, which is the slow roll solution. And if I plug these then into my inflationary parameters, I get a nice form of the inflationary parameters, which is the one we know in terms of the slow roll parameters, just derivatives of the potential. And so what I would like is a generalization of this. I would like to know what is the analog of the slow roll solution for non-canonical inflation. It would be nice to kind of write that down. And I would also like to see if I can get generalizations of these parameters so that if someone just gives me a model, like you give me your Lagrangian with your potential, then I can quickly just plug it in to these parameters and check where in field space I actually get inflation, for what parameters I get inflation, without having to run any numerics. The current status at this point is I would just have to kind of plug it into a computer and check to see where I get inflation in parameter space. I'd like to have a more analytic way of doing that. OK. Essentially, it turns it into then something you could give to an undergraduate of checking potentials or checking Lagrangians. OK. But in order to do this, I'll have to take a step back and take a more systematic approach to looking for solutions to the equations of motion. So let me write, once again, for canonical inflation, the equations of motion in two equivalent forms, two equivalent first-order forms. So I can write the equation of motion in terms of rho dot, which is the conservation of the integral momentum tensor. Or I can write it in terms of derivatives of the canonical momentum pi. So in terms of the canonical momentum pi, I get something that looks like this. And I can write then the inflationary parameters epsilon and eta in terms of these first order parameters rho and pi in this way. And it turns out to be useful to do that, because then if I invert the equations of motion using these inflationary parameters, I get something that looks like this. So if I invert the rho equation of motion, I get this. And so when epsilon is small, then I get inflationary solutions that we know and love. Pressure is equal to minus energy density. For the pi equation of motion, and I invert this equation of motion and write it in terms of the inflationary parameters, I get this. And once again, when the inflationary parameters are small, I recover my usual slow roll solution. So this was just a rederivation of what I had on the previous slide. But it formalizes it in a nice way that will generalize to the non-canonical case. Any questions about this? So let me just take a step back. And what am I looking for non-canonical inflation? Once again, I want this epsilon and eta parameter to be small, even in the presence of these higher dimensional operators. But I want this to happen in a region far from the slow roll regime. So I want the usual slow roll parameters. They'll probably be of order 1. In fact, I want them to be of order 1. But I still want epsilon and eta to be small. So I'm going to deviate from the usual slow roll solutions. And so this is what I expect to see at the end of the day. So let me now construct those solutions. So I can rewrite the equations of motion for this Lagrangian, also in a first order formalism in terms of the energy density. This one didn't change at all, which is good. In fact, we didn't expect it to change. I can write it in terms of the canonical momentum pi, where pi now here is a little bit more of an involved parameter, but once again, takes some nice form. And then the inflationary parameters, I'll actually write, so epsilon once again is written in rho dot. Eta I'll separate out into two parameters I'll call eta x and eta pi. This just adds one more degree of, one more level of the parameters that I need to be small. So what I'm going to say now is for eta to be small, I want epsilon, eta pi, and eta x to be small. There is a interesting case when eta x and eta pi almost cancel each other, but it turns out it's a Lagrangian of the form log x, and it violates the conditions that I said at the beginning. It will violate the physical sound speed condition. So I'm not going to consider that. So I'm going to consider eta x and eta pi both to be small individually. And then if I rewrite the equations of motion in terms of these parameters, I get something similar. Once again, when epsilon is small, then pressure is equal to minus energy density, as we expected. But now it allows me to find the non-canonical inflationary solutions when the epsilon and eta parameters are small. And it's just, in fact, the generalization of the canonical solution. So if you take the potential to just have, or if you take the Lagrangian to just have phi dependence in the potential, the solution, non-canonical inflationary solution, looks almost identical in pi variables as it did in the canonical case. So the usefulness of this is now I can rewrite the inflationary parameters in terms of functions of phi only. And if you give me your favorite Lagrangian, then I can compute those things explicitly. So as function of phi, I don't have to do any numerics. So if I do it in all generality, then these parameters epsilon, eta x, and eta pi look kind of ugly just because I don't have the general solution. In other words, I can't solve that in general. I have to solve it in specific cases, although that is the general solution. But let me take an example and show you how this whole procedure works. Let me take a Lagrangian of this form, just something I kind of picked out of the hat, 1 plus x to the 3 halves, and the scale lambda is then the UV scale at which these terms are getting suppressed, and minus the potential. The non-canonical inflationary solution, the generalization of the standard slow roll solution, can be written extremely explicitly in terms of this function a of phi, where a is already known once you give me the potential. It's just the usual slow roll parameter times v over lambda to the 4. It's just kind of nice to write it in that way because this is the parameter that you expect to be small in the standard slow roll limit. And then you can compute the epsilon parameter, for instance, very explicitly, and just as a function of phi. And look at it in various limits. When this parameter A is small, then you recover the standard slow roll result. When that parameter is large, you get the slow roll result, but then suppressed by some power of A. Here it's a to the 1/2 for this particular model. And so you can have, in this model, epsilon is small, even though epsilon's slow roll could be large. It suppresses the usual inflationary parameters.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about things.
Okay.
First, if I go to something like DBR or things simple, what's the relationship between these and the old parameters that we had that looked like the slow roll except the SPS phenomenon?
You're talking about Hamilton Jacobi?
Yeah, epsilon was always epsilon. Epsilon less than 1 was always the condition for inflation.
Epsilon less than 1 is still also the condition.
So both your epsilon and your epsilon slow roll. So
In DBI, epsilon slow roll is not small when you get DBI inflation. Right.
Sorry, epsilon is less than 1. But I'm just saying small isn't less than 1.
Yeah, so epsilon is still, I still want epsilon to be small here, but not epsilon slow roll.
So in the old case, they were the same. Epsilon is slow roll and epsilon is h by over.
In the canonical case.
And in DBI.
No,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, you know that can't happen because you get inflation on a steep potential. And so if you're getting inflation on a steep potential when epsilon's slow roll is large, I
okay, anyway, so no, kind of CS and
both.
Basically, that was the only difference, I guess, between the yes, if you write into a little potential, it was epsilon plus e prime over v squared, and it worked for CS. That was the change.
Okay, so that's, but that's still not the same. Wait, why would it be 1 over CS? Wouldn't that make epsilon larger?
That's right, so there was always wouldn't a correlation between those. So I'm just wondering if, what's the relationship between these parameters that you've defined and what and the ones that sort of went to.
So the difference between this and Hamilton-Jacobi, so this will reduce the same thing that you get from Hamilton-Jacobi, in fact. What I've done here is, in Hamilton-Jacobi, you never actually knew what the real inflationary solution was.
And you didn't need to, I guess. All you need to know was H.
Well, all you need to know was H, but if someone gives you Lagrangian, you don't know H. You know V. So I'm doing it from the other point of view, which is if someone gives you a Lagrangian, somebody gives you V, from the Hamilton-Jacobi point of view, you didn't know how to compute this. You had to make kind of guesses on what you thought the H should be. And here, this is the procedure on how to actually construct.
Okay, but your epsilon non-canonical less than 1 is still a condition for inflation?
That's right. Yeah, epsilon and eta are still, it's still the same condition that these are less than 1 for inflation. It's just that they differ from the slow roll results. They differ from what it's not epsilon slow roll and eta slow roll are smaller than 1. It's epsilon and eta are smaller than 1.
Let me try and remember that. So the statement is that if you could have calculated how much probability it would have been what you find here.
That's right.
So you're finding a way of extracting it from the.
That's right. And in fact, this would have matched if you did Hamilton-Jacobi and just put in for h square root of v. Which is what you would have expected, is that the Hubble parameter is dominated by the potential in the Hamilton-Jacobi. And so this would give you exactly this. And so we check this for DBI or whatever other cases you want to check. But the point here is that you had to do some kind of iteration process to then compute, say, subleading corrections to that of when it's not just V, when it's V plus other things. The point here is that this gives you explicitly what the inflationary solution is to whatever you want. So.
Process.
That's right. It's actually doing what you wanted to do in Hamilton-Jacobi for you. Okay, so this is in fact what we're going to talk about next, which is comparison to Hamilton-Jacobi. We just essentially talked about it. You just rewrite everything in terms of Hamilton-Jacobi formalism and these H's. And the point of what I just said was, once again, this is just a formalism rewriting all of the equations of motion. It doesn't actually tell you what the inflationary solution is. So you never really know how to evaluate these, except by taking guesses on what H should be. But H isn't what you're given from the Lagrangian V is. And so this is more of a more useful technique when you actually have H as a function of phi. If you wanted to construct those inflationary solutions a priori from the Lagrangian, then what I outlined before is the more efficient approach. Okay, so a standard story from canonical inflation is that inflation is an attractor in phase space. And the natural question then to ask is whether this is true in non-canonical inflation. So the inflationary solution that we found for pi defines some trajectory in pi phi phase space. So let me take perturbations about this inflationary trajectory. So take some delta pi, where delta pi is something small. And I want to ask, how do these perturbations then evolve over time? And so I can plug this into the equation of motion, getting an equation of motion for how the perturbations evolve. And this prime here I've converted now from derivatives with respect to time into derivatives with respect to e folds, because it's more convenient to write it this way. Then the equation of motion tells me that delta pi prime over delta pi is minus 3 plus things of order the inflationary parameters. So when the inflationary parameters are small, when I actually have inflation, namely when this solution even exists, then my perturbations, I can integrate this, my perturbations decay as e to the minus 3 times the number of e folds. It's in fact a fairly old and well-known result for canonical inflation, where it was originally done in Hamilton-Jacobi formalism for canonical inflation. I can still do it in Hamilton-Jacobi formalism for non-canonical inflation. So take a Hubble parameter H, which is something inflationary, and then some perturbation around that, and study how those perturbations in H decay Once again, they decay as delta H prime over delta H is minus 3 plus things of order the inflationary parameters. So the perturbations once again decay as e to the minus 3 times the number of e-folds. So what this tells me is that perturbations about the inflationary solution decay with time, and they decay rapidly with the number of e-folds. And so inflation in phase space is actually an attractor in the sense that small perturbations away from it are driven to zero.
To make this statement, you've already thrown out the second derivative of phi.
Already thrown out the second. I'm keeping this Lagrangian p as a function of x and phi. No, sorry, you meant. Sorry, what did you mean?
That turns into 3h phi dot equals v prime.
Sorry, which one?
That
equation. 3h phi.
I'm asking if you have the if you're solving a first order equation or second order.
I'm solving a first order equation in pi, which is a second order equation in phi. Yes.
So, yes. Yeah. In general, one reason people normally avoid constant theories is that, well, they have two generic problems, which are embedded in specific scenarios. One is that you generically do not know how to have a multiplied evolution equation. You have a bunch of either have an infinite number of derivatives, there are infinite conditions which have to specify to have it well defined. And the second problem is these things are generic, those equations are generically unstable.
I'm not doing arbitrarily high derivatives. I'm doing powers of x. And I think the statements you said are true if you do arbitrary powers of derivatives, but not functions of x.
Actually, I disagree with the true in that case.
You disagree with what? I'm sorry?
I disagree that that statement's true even in that case.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I bet, okay. I bet you would. But I think you would agree that this is not the case if the Lagrangian is purely a function of x. If it's a function of arbitrary high powers of derivatives, then what you said may or may not be true depending on whether Neil wants to argue with that.
Well, I don't want to
argue with that. No, okay.
That your claim is that these.
That these problems are not present in these models.
Yes, it's absolutely.
Yeah.
It's also true you rarely have a choice. You're really allowed to choose some
sort of x. So let me get to that. I believe that's in fact the next slide. But I did want to point out one last thing, which sometimes is confusing in the literature, which is that this actually is true for large and small field models. Sometimes you'll come across the statement that small field models are not attractors in phase space, not even for localized perturbations. And this actually isn't true. I mean, this analysis shows it explicitly. So this is true for all possible models that you can write down, that these things are always at least localized attractors. We'll talk about small deviations at the end of the talk. But
that's a tractor in a very specific sense.
It's a tractor in the sense of
most inflation you can continue with.
Right, right.
You just start out randomly and
okay, so this is in a different sense of a tractor. I mean a tractor in the sense of if you wrote down some first order differential equations as I just did, then there's some attractor trajectory. And this is kind of the standard definition of a tractor in that context.
But you're not committing yourself to coupling the domain of attraction.
Not in arbitrary inhomogeneous initial condition space.
Or even homogeneous ones. You're saying that there is a region around that curve which is attractive to
nothing. So it turns out, I avoided getting into this because I didn't want to get into this too much. It turns out for arbitrary large deviations that you get the same result.
So in a small field case, the footprint would have been that. If you don't start near the top of the hill, then it's
perfect. No, I know. So the two statements are, in fact, consistent.
Yeah, but it's a different question.
Yeah, that's right. So essentially what it means is that this is a bad definition for the strength of the attractor. But it does tell you dynamically that all perturbations want to make it to the attractor. The question of whether they do or not is a model-dependent statement. And we'll get into the details of that in a little bit. So maybe I can defer your question a little bit, and then I'll return to that.
Okay, two questions for 30.
Wait, what was the first one?
The next one was going
to
be the
table. Oh, yeah, let's get to that right now. I'm not going to get to that right now. Okay. Now, we'll definitely get to that.
We'll just continue with the attractor story. I mean, we don't have any example of a model of inflation which is not a factor of the
system. That's right.
So it's just, it's not a property of the skater field action. It's just a property of essentially inventory solutions. Every inventory solution perturbation around the
I'm not going to make statements about, say, e to the box. I don't know about those types of models, but I know if you have an Lagrangian, which is function of x.
Yeah, it's kind of a statement about inflation. But if you have a small perturbation kinetic energy away from the solution, that washes out. And you can say that any inflation can be a solution unless you have something
more bizarre. It seems natural, which is why I, though, hedged on the e to the box, because that seems kind of bizarre to me, at least from my interpretation. But. Sorry, I'm trying to spot that. For all possible Lagrangians?
Well, just depending on the perturbation amount of background. So you're sending all possible perturbation.
Yeah.
With all possible properties of perturbation. Mm-hmm. Trying to find the most exotic model, which would have a really weird perturbation that somehow grows even though you're.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Is that model that makes perturbation?
Yeah, the thing I don't know is I had to use the equation of motion to derive these types of things. And so I don't know if you write down something really funky as an equation of motion if that would still be true. It's worth thinking about. Yeah.
You just demand and try to search for a model where
that's not true.
And have something that grows.
Yeah. I imagine they will be sick for other reasons then. Yeah. Okay. Let me briefly get into then what properties this Lagrangian should satisfy, and then I'll come back to some of the consistency questions that we've been asking. So for canonical inflation, we knew that in order to get inflation, we wanted epsilon and eta slow roll to be small, which told us that we needed some sufficiently flat potential. So someone could give you a potential, you could just check, or rather look at the potential and guess whether it's flat or not. And this tells you in the space of potentials what potentials are suitable for inflation and which ones are not. So I would like a generalization of this for these Lagrangians p of x phi. What Lagrangians in the space of Lagrangians are suitable for non-canonical inflation and which ones are not? So I want to be far from the flat potential limit of this. I want to have non-canonical inflation. And so it turns out there's a parameter which tells me that. We already saw it earlier, this parameter a. When this parameter a is small, we recovered the slow roll limit in this previous example we saw. But when a is large, then we're in the extremely non-canonical limit. And this a is large can happen when two things happen. One, when the potential is really steep, so the standard slow roll parameter is large, and when the potential is large in units of this UV scale lambda. The last one should probably make you a little bit nervous, because why should I trust a potential that's large in this unit of the UV scale? But I think really the thing I should be worried about is whether the Hubble scale is large in units of lambda. And the Hubble scale is related to the potential by this factor lambda over M Planck. And so if this is much greater than 1, I can still have H over lambda be smaller if lambda over M Planck is small. So I should still be OK. Subdominant to the potential. It will always be subdominant to the potential.
How does it compare to H over
Well, it should be smaller by a factor of, say, epsilon.
But is phi dot over, say, phi squared, is that small compared to 1? Is that phi dot squared over that? You can imagine the kinetic energy being subdominant to B, but still being bigger than that before. Does that mean that?
Yes, it could happen. So there are some models where that will happen, and you should be worried. And then there are some models where that doesn't happen, and then everything makes sense. So yeah, in the space of Lagrangians that you write down, if I just wrote down some infrared Lagrangian, then I can write down Lagrangians which do non-canonical inflation, which do both, when phi dot squared over the UV scale is smaller than 1 or larger than 1. The ones larger than 1, you might want to throw away due to concerns about it not making sense. But when it's smaller than 1, you still get models that do this. So. For instance, DBI is one example of that. Another property I want my Lagrangian to satisfy is I want to have my non-canonical inflationary solution to the equation of motion increase the Hubble friction. I need to somehow increase the friction so that I don't roll down too fast in the potential. It turns out the non-canonical limit that we had before is throwing away these terms. The canonical limit is or the standard slow roll approximation is throwing away this term, and this term didn't exist. Now the generalization is throwing away both of these. So you still have Hubble friction and driving force in your equation of motion for these inflationary solutions. And the important part is that when the Lagrangian is non-canonical, so when dB dx is not equal to 1, then you get an extra coefficient in this Hubble friction term. And in particular, if this thing increases as the speed increases, as phi dot increases, then you get more Hubble friction as you're sliding down a steep potential. And so this should help you then with inflation. It's kind of an intuitive understanding of what you need. And if you want this thing to increase with the speed phi dot, that means that the second derivative of Lagrangian with respect to x should be positive. But in fact, this is a condition that we already required, that the sound speed is physical. And so this doesn't need to be anything extra that we impose. OK, so altogether, the conditions that are sufficient to get something that gives non-canonical inflation is a steep potential, a potential that's large in units of the lambda, scale lambda, and a positively curved kinetic term, positive second derivative. And when this is true, the inflationary parameters behave quite generally as the slow roll parameters suppressed by some power of A, this parameter A, where the parameter, or the power rather, depends on the particular model, but it's between 0 and 1.
Sorry, but I'm still getting stuck. Usually, in the usual definition of epsilon slow roll, the condition A double dot greater than 0 is exactly the condition epsilon less than 1.
Mm-hmm.
So inflation, I'm getting confused on your definition there. So
epsilon is small. Yes.
At steep potential, epsilon slow roll greater than 1?
Epsilon is not epsilon slow roll. Epsilon is epsilon slow roll suppressed by a factor of A.
So the condition for inflation is your epsilon exactly less than 1?
Yes.
And you're saying that you can suppress that, for example, by multiplying this.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, in the DBI limit, this is exactly like epsilon slow roll times sound speed.
Okay.
I said they were sufficient. Actually, there's another sufficiency condition which I didn't mention, which is that I'm really kind of using here that the Lagrangian factorizes into some function of x and then some potential. It's kind of a cheat. When that's not true, you can show that in general this you don't get non-canonical inflation, although you can come up with some conditions under which you can still have some phi dependence in the kinetic terms. For instance, DBI is an example when this happens. And so there's this one parameter, then you can check to see if it's still OK to have phi dependence in the kinetic term. But I'm kind of glossing over that right now. But these are sufficient conditions.
But actually, the first one you don't even need, right? Because you could revert to slow roll inflation.
Yeah, so sufficient conditions for getting non-canonical inflation as opposed to canonical inflation.
So 1 and 2 are just another way of saying you want A large.
That's right. I want A large and epsilon to be small in the limit that A is large. For instance, you could have said, why don't you just take V over lambda to the 4 to be of order 1 and just make epsilon slow roll really large. But then you don't suppress the real epsilon in that limit. And so I have to do both. So let me show you some examples of this. So the example, this is kind of a general class of examples, is if someone gives you some power series. And this power series has some non-zero radius convergence. Let me, for argument's sake now, let me suppose that this radius convergence is smaller than 1, smaller than or equal to 1, so that this power series still kind of makes sense. Then I want the power series to have a non-zero radius convergence. And then I also need, so this condition, that the derivative is positive, second derivative is positive, I need that the power series must diverge at the radius convergence. Think dBi. If you write dBi as a power series, the derivative of this is 1 over the square root. So you write its power series, it diverges as it approaches the boundary of the radius convergence. So it's exactly an example of this type. But 1 over 1 minus x is in the power series for that is another example. Then no matter what the details are, the rest of the details are, given the potential, at least, you have that the inflationary parameters, epsilon and eta, behave in precisely this way.
This also certainly factorizes.
That's right. Well, actually, not entirely true. No. So I actually have allowed some phi dependence here. And so there's a parameter delta, which is the derivative of this over itself with some factors of lambda that has to be small in order for this to be true. In the DBI example, that's that the derivative of the warp factor has to be sufficiently small, or the log derivative of the warp factor has to be sufficiently small. So there's a large class of examples that you can think of then, 1 over 1 minus x, square root, 1 over 1 minus x to some power, any of these types of models. Let me give you some more explicit examples. DBI is one. So DBI is a square root form. The second derivative is always positive. And in fact, if you find the inflationary solutions, then you find that epsilon always goes like, in the large A limit, epsilon's the rule suppressed by A.
What's A in this case?
And then A is given by this potential. So whatever potential you gave in, I don't have to specify it at this point. Another set of Lagrangians I could have given, say, are these power-like Lagrangians 1 plus x to the n. Second derivative is always positive. The inflationary parameter behaves in a similar way. Epsilon's the rule suppressed by power of A between 0 and 1. Yeah?
So I don't know if you're going to get to that later, but all of these examples and things are a very peculiar choice of you know, P of A to phi. So they're not going to be arbitrarily stable if you have just a random operator of, say, square or lambda. You know, I'm just asking the same, is there an eta problem? So here, if I have to any of these actions, a generic correction will ruin the
correction. No, it doesn't
there's
ruin.
No, problem.
No, there's no similar. As long as it satisfies the conditions that the first and second derivatives with respect to x are always positive.
No, but if I add another L square phi. Don't even have to be a function of x. And I'm going to type which are all allowed x.
So the higher derivatives I'm going to show in a second are small, are always small evaluated on these solutions, which was Cliff's earlier question, which I deferred, at least one of them.
That's not quite the same statement, right? Because you know, something what you're going to say is you're going to say that once you're inflating, the higher derivatives fade away. But it's not quite the same thing as saying if I took a Penasquith effect of Lagrangian, which had all possible things, I think it would just look like it's
going to
find inflation in the first place.
I'm not saying anything about initial conditions. I'm saying if you were on the set of, if you were on one of these inflationary solutions, then all the higher derivative operators would be unimportant.
Yeah, but so do you have anything to say at all about if I just take a generic Lagrangian polynomials and x, but also just derivatives of what inflation
exists? That was your question?
But it's
okay.
A statement
no,
general,
I don't.
The general statement, if I write an expression in x, is that n will be 1 to 1. There's no, you know, it's the increment on paper. It's just the statement that in general, if you demand x of lambda 4 to be big, then they all big. You know, they don't sum up. You're essentially assuming some unique coefficient here. You sum up the two square root or two power.
Yeah.
These are not stable. You can assume an infinite number of operators sum up until it kills 4.
I guess I'm not sure why you mean if I added some onto this arbitrary power of x over lambda before, nothing bad happens.
Well, so for an effective filtering point of view, how can you justify a square
root? Well, this one we know why we can justify it because it comes from some DBI model.
Yeah,
that's right.
Because we know UV.
That's right. I'm not telling you to trust these other two.
So
I'm just writing down in the class of Lagrangian, the space of Lagrangians, what are some other examples that work aside from DBI? So we have other examples to think of in our mind. That there's nothing special about DBI is what I'm saying. There's nothing special about square root form, any other form.
Well, there is something special in the sense that DBI is the only one where we think we have a UV theory
sure.
that justifies.
Sure, but I mean nothing special from the phenomenological point of view of writing it down.
Sorry, I think I just missed something.
Yeah.
You're assuming large potential, so B is much greater than lambda to the 4.
Yes.
Why are you then justified in treating B only as a function of phi? Because lambda is a scale which new physics could be coming in, right? So
mm-hmm.
In principle, couldn't the potential depend on other fields, which are relatively like with respect to the scale of B?
Right. So this is why I also wanted H to be small in units of lambda, because I didn't want to excite these other fields.
Okay.
For instance, in this explicit two-field model, V over lambda to the 4, much greater than 1, would be fine, and I wouldn't excite the extra row field. Okay. So let me get to this consistency question that keeps coming up. So I only included powers of x. What about higher powers of time derivatives, for instance, d cubed, or higher dimensional even curvature operators? Should I worry about all these types of operators in my solutions? And the first question I want to ask, it's one level of the types of questions I can ask about consistency of the solutions, is are these extra terms important when I evaluate it on the background? So was I justified in dropping all these other terms and looking for these inflationary solutions? And what you find is that all these higher dimensional operators, all of these, are of order h over lambda to the power of the operator minus 4, times epsilon to the m, where m is the number of derivatives, and epsilon is the kind of nth or mth order inflationary parameter. So it includes epsilon and eta to the m, but also these higher order inflationary parameters. So as long as I demand h over lambda less than 1, which I want to do, and as long as I am inflationary, which I want to be in, then all of these operators are small. Okay. But this isn't the only level of questioning I could ask. I should be concerned about the perturbations. In particular, if the perturbations are so large that they back react on the background, then I shouldn't trust what I was doing in the first place. And so I have some condition on the Hubble scale then, in terms of the Planck scale, and CS, for that to be true. But it turns out there's even worse problems when I'm in these non-canonical models, because due to these kinetic term couplings, these perturbations can be strongly coupled themselves through the kinetic terms. I can view that as happening at some new scale lambda strong, which may or may not be above the Hubble scale. And I, in fact, I want it to be above the Hubble scale in order to trust what I'm doing. And this puts a new constraint, an even stronger constraint on h over m Planck in terms of the sound speed and the inflationary parameter. Or I could also be worried that the higher derivative terms are not necessarily just important for the background, which as we saw, they're small. But if I consider perturbations, the perturbations can see these higher derivative operators. And they can become strongly coupled due to those. And those derivative operators could be important. And so I don't want that to happen either. And if these perturbations become strongly coupled, then I don't know whether my perturbations are not backreacting on my background solution, so I should still be worried. And so I want to satisfy the most conservative of these so that I'm not in a regime where I can't trust the computations that I'm doing. And all of these restrict the degree of the non-canonicalness that I can have. But presumably for any given model that someone wants to study, there's a non-zero parameter space in which you can satisfy these constraints and you can still have non-canonical inflation. And that's the regime I want to work in. Okay.
The last one is the meaning of the derivative terms.
Yeah, so the higher derivative terms, you don't want to be important either in your perturbations. For the perturbations now and not for the background. We already saw for the background, they're small.
So your claim, so the strength of this claim is that so before you, I would have said that what's special about DBI is that it has the property that it's like a relativistic particle when x over lambda the fourth goes to 1, then in that limit, higher derivatives of error are going to 0. Because your acceleration step is going to 0.
Well, you're in fact still subject to this even in DBI.
Yeah, but I would have said that's the case where you the actual functional form is protecting itself.
It's not necessarily true. This really constrains DBI as well.
Okay, good.
So
you don't have to resist.
Okay.
So I would have said before you came in that of all the things you looked at, that the DBI was special in the sense that it was protecting itself. So that if you want to say, why would I believe that functional form of x and throw away the derivatives of x, then there was at least a story to tell DBI that it was self-consistent. The relativistic limit was a self-consistent limit, which the functional form is being controlled by relativistic kinematics. But you're saying that actually the functional form of the pressure is not really relevant, because if you can find, and this will probably be the big thing, but if you can find an inflationary solution at all, then it'll be self-consistent unless you're in that region regardless of form. As long as you preserve what you need to have inflation, then it will get sucked in further. The higher derivatives are less and less important.
For the background.
And the But the, this is right for fluctuations too?
No, for the fluctuations, they're not protected. Yeah, and so this is why I was disagreeing with the first statement.
But in a sense, you would disagree with that for DBI too.
That's right. I would disagree with that for DBI, yeah.
Yeah, there's no limit on how small CS can be, right?
It can be whatever you want.
But then why are you saying that, I don't believe the relativistic dynamics for one particle is described by the relativistic action of one particle? You're saying that somehow that's not a stable description of relativistic dynamics.
Well, because there's other stuff going on in the UV. Right. I mean, would you agree with that interpretation? There's other stuff. It's not just relativistic particle. When I'm considering DBI, it's some relativistic particle in some string background, and so as it goes too fast, then it excites other stuff. Excites other strings, for instance.
You'd be saying there's no regime in which you would trust the DBI.
No, there is a regime in which I would trust the DBI action. It would be the regime that satisfies these constraints.
So this is controlling.
That, right. This is not automatic, but it is a regime. So if someone, for instance, in DBI, it's not automatic that you will satisfy these constraints. You have to find a model that will satisfy these constraints. But if you do, then you're fine.
Okay. Thank you. Please be in the most painful way possible.
Okay. 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 I guess I'm just trying to be careful.
No, I understand.
Let me briefly give you an overview in the last 2 minutes, at least in pictures, of some of the dynamics in phase space that we expect to see and what this means for the overshoot problem. And so this is work in progress, and so it may change a little bit. So the overshoot problem in these types of models is if I have some inflection point with some flat region of the potential, then some initial conditions are good and some are bad. If I start steep on the potential, and as it rolls down, it gains too much momentum, and it overshoots the flat spot. So if I start steep on the potential here in phase space, it gains a lot of speed, and then it never hits the inflationary trajectory, which is the dashed blue line. Similarly, if I start on the flat part with large momentum, it never inflates, never reaches the inflationary trajectory. There are a set of good ones, though. If I start right on the flat part with small momentum, then I inflate. So there are some initial conditions which are good, some which are bad. And the fact that there are bad initial conditions in this model is generally called the overshoot problem. So we can ask how general this problem is and what are some possible solutions to it. I want to avoid the measure problem as much as possible here. I just want to ask some very naive level questions about dynamics in phase space.
Essentially, your original attractor story was then that if you're close enough to the blue line, you're stable.
That's right. Yeah, so this is in fact showing exactly that attractor behavior. If I'm close enough to the blue line, I hit the blue line. All right, if I'm close enough to inflation, I am attracted to it. But if I'm far enough away, then I never actually reach it. But this isn't true for all models. In particular, for large field models of a potential of m squared phi squared, then this isn't true. I can start really far away from the inflationary solution, and I end up hitting the attractor solution, and I get inflation. So large field models don't have an overshoot problem in general. Small field models do. So I could ask then, what's going on here? What is the relevant feature that's giving me this physics? Can I understand it? And then I can also, can I understand how non-canonical kinetic terms can help? And there's two possible reasons that this could be happening. Well, at least two that I can think of. One is that the scale of inflation in large field models is different from that of small field around the gut scale. Or that the field range is large in Planck units. And a priori, it wasn't really obvious to me which one this was until we started studying it. One aspect of this is just kind of making pictures of phase space. Phase space divides up nicely into certain regions, depending on whether kinetic energy or potential energy dominates, or whether Hubble friction or driving force dominates. Those create four different regions, one of them which doesn't show up on this picture. And then you can generally make pictures of what the flows on phase space look like. For a generic model, I haven't even told you what the potential is here. Well, although this one is specific for the inflection point. But they all look pretty much the same like this. So the question of the overshoot problem then is, for instance, if I'm far in this region A, where I have large momentum, how much momentum do I lose? And how far do I move in phi space when I'm losing that momentum? And for canonical Lagrangians, and it turns out the answer is, it doesn't depend on the potential. It's only about the kinetic term. And you always move order one in Planck distance. In fact, this tells you then why large field models have an overshoot problem, or large field models do not have the overshoot problem, and small field models do, because the inflaton moves in units of the inflationary trajectory. For large field models, some small fraction of the inflationary trajectory, or in large or small field models, it moves a large distance. So it always misses the inflationary trajectory. So just in one line, let me say what I expect to happen for non-canonical Lagrangians without any proof or details. In non-canonical Lagrangians, I can compute this for specific models, DBI models, any other types of models I want to write down. And I find that now, once again, it's independent of the potential, only depends on the kinetic term. Now the inflaton moves much, much less than one in Planck units. Even so, for small field models, then, I can have a chance or hope of not having an overshoot problem. And let me show that in pictures. So canonical model, I have a large amount of momentum in region A. I always overshoot. I never hit the inflationary trajectory. Never get attracted. Now some DBI-like model, I start with some large momentum in region A. Now I shoot down and hit the inflationary trajectory. I don't overshoot. Same thing for these other types of Lagrangians, these power-like Lagrangians. It's fairly generic. I start out in region A where I should have overshot with a canonical kinetic term, but no, I now get attracted down and I make it to the inflationary trajectory. So this was a partial answer to your question earlier about what happens for arbitrarily large distances. The lore is that you overshoot. Well, the lore is true for canonical kinetic terms. You can change that story. We know now why this is true for canonical kinetic terms in the small field limit, and so we can study this more generally. Okay, let me not speculate. So let me summarize. I discussed kinetic terms, or Lagrangians rather, of the form P of x phi, which I motivated from an effective field theory point of view, and found non-canonical inflationary solutions and the sufficient conditions for when this should happen. We showed how canonical inflation is an attractor in phase space. And then I briefly discussed what happens in phase space and hopefully how this can help the overshoot problem and then maybe help some other fine-tuning problems that we typically have in inflation. So that's it. Thanks.
The
conditions you said where you take away Baumann, you said? Take that potential, for instance. Yes, except let me caveat that. So this was actually studied then by Hiranya and Daniel student Simeon Bird for the specific models that they have. And it turns out then for specific DBI models, the field space bound, or the bound on how far you can move in phi space, actually cuts out all DBI inflation on the inflection point. It's because the warp factor varies like an ADS warp factor, and because you have a bound on the field space, so you can't go arbitrarily far out on the inflection point, and so you don't end up getting a solution in those particular models.
But that's the problem with microscopic.
That's right. That's right. For all the plots I showed, I took a constant warp factor. So Enrico Payer has some ideas on what might happen for getting DBI inflation at the tip of a throat where the warp factor is exactly constant. And then I would expect this story to be true, that you would avoid the overshoot problem.
So how do you reconcile your, on the one hand you said that once I've got inflation, I have to impose additional conditions to make the perturbations stable. You have that slide that has these extra conditions. How do you reconcile with that with the statement that the inflationary trajectory was an attractor?
So I mean, when I said perturbations for an attractor, I meant perturbations in pi. So small
perturbations.
Yeah, so some small kinetic energy perturbations. So I start somewhere else in initial condition space, is what I meant there. As opposed to studying the perturbations, the quantum perturbations that are induced on this classical background. That's the difference. Any other questions?
So I started with the power of the And so, I'm trying to understand if there's an interprom for a case where you have non-canonical extension.
Okay.
And I'm going to guess that there is, although, like, if I just start with n-squared pi-squared canonical extension, then I say this is relatively stable. I will not generate, if I just calculate the means of correction, I
okay.
don't actually generate standards of creators.
Okay.
The usual philosophy is as well, like, to try to get n squared pi squared.
Well, you need to impose an extra symmetry to make that
yeah.
statement true, right?
That's right. So if I have parabola, what is the extra symmetry that tells me that I should not have written all the other terms?
You can, nothing. I'm not telling you anything.
And if I do write them, then the parabola obviously is broken, right?
So that's right. So now you have some general series
right.
of powers of x.
So isn't that just the same interprom? So there's the same interprom in both cases?
I would say that you still get non-canonical inflation. You should still get non-canonical inflation when you include all those other terms.
If I just write a generic series
yeah.
in x's, you say yeah. generically that
inference. Let me remove the rather physical condition that x over lambda to the 4 should be smaller than 1. Okay, because we'll start moving in that regime. If x over lambda to the 4 can be greater than 1, take any power series you want. It's fine.
Any x?
E to the x, for instance. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So you have to pretty. You had a set of constraints to satisfy.
No. So the set of constraints, and we're in fact, I mean, so these are the things. Oh, you mean for the perturbations, or? I mean, these are the constraints to actually get the solutions. Are just that the second derivative is positive for the kinetic term. That's really the only constraint you need. So as long as these corrections preserve that, you're fine.
Okay, Brett's here all week, so plenty of time to talk to him.
Okay.
You know, it's a pretty obvious question.
Yeah.
It's the things you don't write down on the whiteboard.